There we go. I actually got the sequence right for a change. Welcome to Thursdays with Nico on a Friday. And when Nico pops in, we will cover MLS Cup. We will go over the offseason. We might look at St. Louis City and what they are going to be going through in about 6 hours' time with their expansion draft. And Tom Bogert came up with a list of guys that he would select in this process. We'll see what Nico thinks about that. We've got all 32 World Cup rosters that have been announced, and go through some of that if Nico wants to. Go over the U.S. men's national team. There's a lot of stuff to get into when Nico Moreno from the Soccer Bar and from Pulso Sports joins us coming up in just a little bit. Once again, reminders of all the other programming. Don't forget to download the Soccer Down Here app, available iOS and Android, and then that way you can catch up with all the programming. If you miss it live on Twitch, it will roll over eventually to other platforms, and you just keep an eye on that as well. So this week on the network, we've caught up with Stephen Short from Lexington as Lexington gets ready for USL League One. We caught up with Coleman Gannon and Marco Micheletto, who got a championship, an MLS Next Pro with Columbus Crew 2. So it was good to catch up with them. And Marco, obviously, with ties to our friends at South Georgia Tormenta here off the right shoulder. And he noticed that when we were shooting the 1v1. So it was good to catch up with him. And Coleman Gannon, it was fun to reminisce about his time with Atlanta United 2 and how he took that time and is now applying that. He was headed to college and then just decided to go the open tryout route with Crew 2, made his way in. Got a championship in MLS Next Pro in the first season of the league. They only lost three matches that entire season, did Crew 2. And so, you know, the season starts, season's over, you lose three, you win a title, and you were kind of looking for the season to keep going because it was over before it started almost. It was a very, very quick turn. And so Crew 2, they are champions as well. So that is on the app and the network. Don't forget, it's iOS and Android, Soccer Down Here. And you get to catch all of our conversations that we record during the week, all of our specialty programming with USL League One. And that was a busy week for them last weekend, where they ended up getting a champion decided. And South Georgia Tormenta does the rare double on the men's and women's side and gets your titles in USL League One. So now, with his, let's see, since it's 10, I'm going to say second cup of coffee. Is it the second cup of coffee, Nico?
Hey, what is going on, my man? It absolutely is my second cup of coffee, even though it is a holiday today. So I haven't been up all that much. But I said, look, I'm going to be out with my guys in the East Coast. I got to act like it's the afternoon. So I just went up for my second cup of coffee. But as always, it's a pleasure to be here with you, with your audience. Excited with this Mundialista episode, I'm guessing. You know, we're going to be talking about some U.S. national team or, you know, whatever you got for me, but I'm ready, my man. I'm ready.
Rapid fire for a half hour covering the world. Okay, so he's going plain. He's going making the statement with the mug. It doesn't have to be the mug itself that draws everybody to us. It's the contents of the mug. That's what matters. That's where we are. But let's go back. Let's go back before we get into to Mundialista. Let's talk about MLS Cup. And just how off the charts, wacky, crazy, nuts the last 60 minutes were. And where does this one rank for you in MLS Cup history? Greatest matches of all time. You can go ahead and take whatever parameter you want. Where does this one rank for you?
Man, it's up there. I mean, this MLS final had absolutely everything that you could have wanted from it. I mean, here were my expectations, and boom, this was what happened. I mean, it just completely blew through it. I mentioned it in a couple of episodes in Spanish, man. You could have not gotten a better script from Steven Spielberg to make this MLS final what it was. For someone like me that has rightfully been criticizing Gareth Bale and some of these other guys that came on to LAFC, I got to say, hey, man, that was worth the whole thing. I mean, whether it was $1 million and all the under the table money in the world, I don't know how much it was, but it was worth it. That moment, that goal was all it took. Going to the game, man, I mean, it was just what we thought, right? It was going to be a battle. It was going to be go for everything. And LAFC showed me that they did have the character. And LAFC showed me that they could win a game where things didn't go right, where they took blows to the face, and they were able to get back on it, right? So that final goal, yes, fantastic work by Bale, right? But it's the moment, right? Crepeau breaks his leg. I mean, terrible, so unfortunate. There's a red card. You're down a man. The goal comes in, right? Elliot is the star. Game is over. It's not. We're going to fight. We're going to push. Palacio is going to work for that second ball. He's going to get behind Basio, who was having a fantastic game. Puts the ball in the middle. Just give you a chance. And there comes Bale, the guy that I don't know who expected it. I know I didn't. Just came in, fly in, and put the ball in. So just applaud that character, that demeanor, and that fight by them. When the 3-3 came around, I knew it was over. I was not even waiting for PKs because of the momentum shift, because I thought that the better takers were on the LAFC side. The better goalie was definitely on Philadelphia. On Philadelphia side. Although, the sub that came in was obviously someone who's very good at PKs. But in all reality, that's just what I thought when it first happened. But to your question, one of the best finals that I've ever watched. I have a hard time ranking them right now, but definitely top five, just because of the level of soccer, the level of dramatics, and just everything that we had in this one.
And I know that it wrote itself. I mean, you have McCarthy, who is the Philly kid, who grew up in the Philly system, went to school in Philadelphia, was a Philly goalie. Then he goes into Miami because of some dude named Andre Blake, and he kind of had to find a place to play. And it just, you look at the PKs. Teo looked like he wanted no business with that first one. He looked like droopy dog, man. Top of the first, he's just kind of like, okay, I know I've got to do this. It's just he didn't know direct eye contact, and the delay seemed to just freak him out internally that much more. Gazdag slips and sends it into row Z, up and over the 32-52. And McCarthy, who had been brought in as a PK specialist in the past for Open Cup, he seemed to be able to read everybody and everything. And when Ilya scored the game winner and apparently, allegedly, got the ish scared out of him when Ilya came running over to him and like jumped up into the park. I mean, yeah, you're right. Spielberg couldn't write a better one. And what does it say, though, about the season for Major League Soccer? Where from 30,000 feet, just you're up high and you're looking at the season. What does it say about 2022 as a season for Major League Soccer, having it in the way that it did? But what does it say about where MLS is right now?
It just speaks of the growth, man. I mean, you had just about everything that you wanted in this one, right? You had players that have come up through this system. You have players that have developed throughout the system. Players that were maybe at a bad place and were able to reignite their careers. You had the talent power, you had the names, you had great soccer. The atmosphere at Banc of California is something that I've had people from Colombia and Argentina and all these places ask me how crazy and how amazing that atmosphere felt, especially with all the hoops that they had to jump through. So I tip my hat to that fan base and everything that they did. The Tifo was fantastic. So it just talks about MLS is for real. I mean, if you've been sleeping under a rock and you haven't realized that MLS is a real deal, then hopefully this wakes you up. Hopefully this hits you in the face and lets you know that it's about passion. It's about the sport. It's about the high quality level. A lot of these guys could be playing anywhere in the world and they would be successful, right? I mean, a lot of these players, Chicho Arango, he's been in Europe. He's been fantastic in Colombia here. Chief, who's going to end up being somewhere in Europe next year. we still don't know what's going to happen with Gary Bell. Does he retire? Does he stay? On the other side, you know, you got Aronson, who's definitely going to go abroad. We'll see what happens with Blake. You got Wagner, who, you know, can easily also be in a European league. So there's just so much in this final, including the viewer rating for that final, which was fantastic. I don't have the numbers in front of me at this time, but it was huge between TUDN, Univision, the main broadcasting channel for the final. I mean, it was a very good final compared to even the Mexican final that in terms of viewing, in terms of excitement and soccer, you know, it didn't, you know, blow up my skirt. So it's just, this is exactly what we're talking about. It's MLS is the real deal. That's the final conclusion. I applaud absolutely everything that had to do with this season and that final.
MLS Cup ratings, let me grab them really quickly, because since you mentioned it, 2.155 million viewers, biggest audience for an MLS Cup final since 1997. Big FOX ended up with like 1.4 million folks, and you had, so of course, the newspaper that I click on wanted me to subscribe to it, and I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that. So then it turns into something else. So 1.48 million English language viewers on Big FOX, 2.15 million with Spanish language TV included. So that is the huge draw that Major League Soccer's last game ended up with. But now tonight, just when you thought there wasn't an offseason, you know, offseason, we can take it easy. Everything's cool. You know, maybe I got a day to catch my breath before what's going on, you know, get my roster ready and get my jersey squared away before what's going on in Qatar. We've got an expansion draft tonight. 7 o'clock Eastern time, 4 o'clock for you. St. Louis City, I guess I should say St. Louis City SC, because it's all in caps. St. Louis City SC gets to pick their dudes. And Tom Bogert came up with a list of folks that he thought, well, you know, could be considered or available and things like that. We know kind of philosophically what they're looking for, kind of like a very Red Bullsy kind of a build with the Lutz Pfannenstiel. What are you looking at tonight with St. Louis City SC as they build? What kind of things are you looking for tonight?
Well, you know, I want to see the approach. Expansion draft can be very hard to decipher, especially because, you know, there could be so many things that you're already doing behind the scenes, right? Like we've seen with Charlotte, right? You draft a guy and you already have a team that's ready to just give you something else for him. They purchased a international slot from the Seattle Sounders. So, you know,
that's like international roster spot, I think, is the guy that they've got the most of right now. I mean, they've got they pulled like a bunch of like three or four of those in some quick trades. So obviously they've got some folks in mind.
Yeah, so exactly. So with that in mind, I'm thinking, you know, they have a couple of DPs or high TAM players that are just ready to be slotted into certain places. So the biggest thing I want to see today I'm looking forward to see is what guys they pick so I can use that to figure out who are these internationals they're bringing in so I can give you guys more breaking news. But not just that, but also there's a lot of quality in here. I mean, speaking of the Seattle Sounders, I was extremely surprised that they did not protect a guy like Jackson Reagan, who is a young player, not extremely young, but, you know, young in an aspect of this is his couple of first MLS seasons. He's a high frame, you know, big guy that is quality on need, good building out of the back, and has played and showed you that he could handle this league with a very low salary. So that's a guy that I was very, I don't know about. But when I heard about this international slot, I mean, is there a little bit of under the table talk about, hey, man, look, I'm going to go ahead and give you this for this much amount of money, but you don't touch none of my guys? I mean, I don't know. But at the end of the day, there is a lot of other quality there in this specific roster. Alejandro Pozuelo is a guy that, you know, maybe you could, you know, build off of on. You got, you know, Yule's another guy that I thought was interesting that was unprotected. So it really, I want to see exactly, I don't have an exact idea of what they're going to do just because it all depends on what you're doing behind the scenes. But I am interested on what position specifically they're going to go for here.
Yeah, the names that that Tommy Scoops put in as his big to-do list, he had in the veterans, he had Bedoya and Dax McCarty, both of whom are turning 36. He had Tyler Miller and Nett, but you've got Roman Berkey, so I don't know if you would bring in Tyler Miller as part of any of those discussions. Mm-hmm. You got Alex Mouille, who he had as a part of his list. Will Trapp from Minnesota United. Tim Parker from Houston as a defender, although he's expensive, $1 million last year, according to the MLSPA. Nick Depew from LAG. Andre Shinyashiki, who turned out really well in a supporting role for Charlotte last year, and he just got signed to a new deal, I believe. Guzman Carujo from Charlotte was on there. You've got Klamala, Gustavo Bow, Ake Loba, who I wouldn't touch with your large 10-foot pole, considering what he was not able to do in Nashville. You mentioned Pozuelo. He was on the list. Joaquini in Orlando, Lucas Estevez in Colorado, and Jackson Reagan along with Nosita from Red Bulls. So those were the ones that he had on his short list.
Yeah, Lucas Stevens is a guy who I immediately looked on to, right? He's a left back with a lot of projection. He can get forward. He actually was having a very good season initially with Colorado. That team kind of disintegrated within itself, mm-hmm. but the talent is there, man. I mean, this guy, he's a game changer. I really do believe he has the qualities of a game changer. I'm not sure what his salary is. I'm guessing he's a little high. But at the end of the day, a guy that's that young with those qualities, you know, he's got that Brazilian chip where he could, you know, just dance right through a one-on-one situation and get at the end line and give you a great ball. So in terms of attributes, tactically and technically, man, this guy's quality, that's one of the guys that if I was starting a team, I would want on my squad, especially because you see the impact that fullbacks have in this league. That is whether I'm playing in a four-man back line or a five-man back line or three center backs, whatever you want to call it. Those guys are very important. They give you width. They give you back and forth. I mean, that's a guy that I was definitely looking at for sure.
Lucas Estevez, according to our friends at MLSPlayers.org at the MLSPA, base salary just over $370,000, guaranteed compensation just over $425,000. So that's what you're getting at with Lucas Estevez from Colorado, as if you wanted to bring him
in. That's not bad.
So Tommy Scoops, his list was this. He goes Bedoya, Mouille, Shinyashiki, Reagan, Klamala. So that was how of all those guys that we talked about that he had on his list, he was like Bedoya, Mouille, Shinyashiki, Reagan, and Klamala.
I don't know if Bedoya would be a guy that I get the experience, I get the leadership, what he brings up to the table, still playing wise, but he's had some injury problems. You know, you saw how much he wanted to be part of this. Finally, he just couldn't. I would think that you want to go a little bit younger for his amount of salary for sure. Mm-hmm. But the other guys I'm all right with. I was looking at a guy, you know, center back for me is a big deal. So Jackson Reagan, if he's not there or if that's not a guy you want, I saw a guy like Jose Quiñones for Dallas. He's an Ecuadorian that's gone really under the radar, but he's a quality center back. Hasn't got a lot of minutes in Dallas, but he's definitely someone who I was looking at particularly there. A guy like Andre Fontas for Sporting Kansas City, another guy that has been a pillar for that team for a very long time, and whose salary is also economical. So a lot of good guys, a lot of good quality, but, you know, you got to trust Tony Scoops. You know, he the man. But, yeah, that's just my overall thoughts on that.
Jackson Reagan, you mentioned economics. Base salary, league min, 65.5. That to me, it seems like there are too many factors there where Jackson Reagan would not be attractive for you.
Let me just say this, man. If they don't pick Jackson Reagan, there was, I don't know, some talks with the teams like, you know, hey, man, don't get my guy. Here you go.
We'll do you solid later, you know.
Yeah, man. I mean, I just can't see it because you're right. This is a guy that, you know, could have easily kept that starting position right next to Yeimer Gomez Andrade. He had some, you know, issues. He's a young guy, but he was able to bounce back, man. But when you're talking about just overall potential quality, man, and, you know, the economical aspect, man, someone is going to be with you for a very long time. You could lock him into a cheap 3-year contract eventually. So, yeah, man, I think he's a no-brainer.
All right, Mundialista time. Let's talk World Cup. It's last time I checked that it is a competition that is still going on, and it's supposed to be over in Qatar in very short order. First and foremost, I mean, are you as jazzed or jacked as of everybody else, or is it kind of like you get through the MLS season, you've still got all the big competitions in Europe who have one more weekend before they jump in? Where is your level of excitement right now about this tournament, considering it just seems to have been shoehorned into this space?
I got to admit that it's not high for many levels, to be quite honest. I mean, from a fan standpoint, obviously Colombia not there. But just the timing, it just doesn't seem natural. You know, when you grow up with this tournament that you're waiting for every 4 years, you're kind of slotted it into a certain part of your year, and it just becomes so natural to it. The amount of excitement hasn't quite been there. I don't know why the expectation to it. There's all everything to me that happened with this Qatar selection just didn't feel right from the very beginning. I don't know if you've seen that documentary on Netflix, but, you know, I recommend it, Uncovering FIFA. Yeah. But, you know, everything that just came about with this Qatar World Cup hasn't had me extremely excited. However, now that the teams start to be announced and you hear the guys that are going to be playing in this tournament, regardless of the issues with temperatures and all of the adjustments that are going to have to be made to have good soccer, which are still pending concerns in my mind, mm-hmm. health-wise for these players, and just that the showmanship and the soccer doesn't get affected, I'm starting to get slightly excited. You know, this U.S. men national team coming up, being revealed, Uruguay pushing their guys, Spain, they brought out their list this morning, and you start seeing some of these stars that you want to see playing for their national team. Gives you a little excitement, but I got to admit to you that this is probably the least excited I've been for a World Cup. And that's when, you know, Colombia's missed a couple. So this is not the first one that they've missed. But in particularly this one, I just haven't been as excited.
So with the announcement of all 32, we know who's going. Let's start with the U.S. What were some of the bigger surprises for you, or were the surprises not surprises when Berhalter came out with his list of 26?
I mean, they write themselves, right? It's pretty obvious. I don't need to be cliche because it's just the reality. Zach Steffen not being part of it is probably the biggest one to me. We have had conversations about how he has not looked his best at many times with the U.S. Men's National Team, in decision-making, just felt out of rhythm. But now the guy is playing on a day-to-day basis. He makes a move, and he's hoping to be part of this squad. In overall potential and talent, I thought he was a lock-in. So I'm interested to see how Turner comes back, and is he ready for this huge challenge? You know, he's had to come back from an injury, and all of those things just made me think that for one reason or another, Zach Steffen, at the very least, has been your guy for the majority of the qualifiers and friendlies. And I do like that continuity. So that was probably my biggest surprise. Ricardo Pepi, not so much. I thought that there was a lot of different forwards that you can go with, right? And I think people sometimes just see it very very specific, but you got to understand that Greg Berhalter has to be ready, and there's an assessment made for circumstantial situations that will present themselves within your group, because that's what you're trying to get out of. You're trying to get out of your group. So I think that the forwards that are part of this team, their profiles can give you an ability to just change a lot of things, right? Greg's been working with a 4-3-3, but all these forwards can give you the ability to maybe go to a 4-2-3-1. You don't really have a big target forward. That would probably be my only issue with it. But regardless of, I think Haji Wright is a guy that is in a very good form, that because of his age and experience, you know, Pep is 19, man. Like, I get that he's playing well, and he's kind of a DC, which, you know, I have my doubts about. I think the quality there, people tend to think that anything in Europe is amazing, anything in Europe is above, you know, standards. But Eredivisie is a very mild, talented league. So because of that, I just wasn't as surprised about the Pepe thing. So if I had to go with one, I just have to go with Zach Steffen. McKenzie was one of the guys that I thought was going to be part of this squad. I wasn't expecting Rim to be part of it until reports started coming in. So, yeah, I mean, those are three guys that I was surprised about. Arriola is a guy that I thought he was on the outskirts. Yes, he's been a guy that they've consistently called, and he's always been there. But at the end of the day, that winger position is full. And look, at the end of the day, Pariola wasn't going to be a starter. He wasn't going to be a main guy, right? So if I'm going to choose between Jordan Morris and Arriola to be a sub coming in, Jordan Morris has the top speed. He has he's a better goal scorer. In reality, he can go through the air. He can make those secondary runs, and he can, you know, play a striker for you, or he could play out on the wing, right? So versatility, very important for this squad. So yeah, that's basically my surprises and why I wasn't extremely surprised about some of them. But Zach Steffen for me was the biggest one.
So now that we've had a lot of nations sit there and say, all right, we want these guys to come in, these guys to come in, we want our rosters. When you've looked at the rest of the World Cup, who are your favorites? And is there an underdog that is kind of lurking that you could sit there and go, yeah, I could see them making a run? Personally, I'm looking at Argentina because of Lionel Messi. And I want him to go out on top. And I don't know if that's my heart talking more than my head in this situation. But right now I'm looking at Argentina, and I know the list of favorites, and I'll get the juice boxes on the favorites in here in just a little bit. But when it comes to World Cup favorites, who in your mind is top of the ladder?
Before I answer that, I'm going to ask you for 2 minutes just to talk about two guys that have been scrutinized, and I've been getting hammered online about it. So okay. I'm going to go ahead and give you this. There are things that I don't necessarily like about the guys called up by the U.S. national team.
Yeah.
Three right backs being one of the things that I don't really understand there. But I get, and after hearing and being part of that conference with Greg Berhalter, I think that there is a plan for these guys. Anyone who's saying that Greg Berhalter has a quota of MLS players is an idiot and doesn't understand that who else other than Greg wants to have the best guys to be successful in his very first World Cup. I mean, I don't know what kind of, you know, tin hat or foil hat conspiracies you're listening to, but that's just not it. Greg is a very intelligent, certified coach that I believe is putting together a collective unit that can chip and change to get the best out of all that talent that you have. So you need a base of very good role players that have versatility in able to be able to exploit guys like Weston McKennie and Weah and Gio Reyna and Pulisic. It's not all about just the top players. You got to create a unit to work with. So the two guys I've been getting a lot of scrutiny have been Jordan Morris and Christian Roldan.
Right.
Have their opinion on them. You don't like them. They're not your type of player. That's fantastic. But don't tell me that they did not earn their spot on this squad. Christian Roldan played hurt with the Seattle Sounders after being a crucial component in getting their CCL championship. Had to get a procedure done in his body early enough in the season to come back, rehab, and be ready for the last two games of the season, putting his body under all kinds of pressure and challenging situations. This guy is out here at Starfire day in, day out, even after they were done with the playoffs done, team is out. Christian Roldan was there the very next day, working hard to be ready for this. So don't tell me occasional fan or crazy US man, the things that you're a Euro snob and all these MLS guys have no reason to be on this squad. Don't tell me that they did not earn it. Jordan Morris is a guy who he had to go through a lot of stuff too. This was a comeback year for him. He was a crucial component in getting this team, giving him a chance to get to that playoff spot. He has earned it by being in all of those US men national team camps, showing Greg Berhalter what to do, taking advantage of the situation whenever he got a call up, because he wasn't a guy that was getting constant playtime and he never disappointed. So don't tell me that they did not earn it. Both of these guys are fantastic. Christian Roldan is a guy that's a switchblade that can do all kinds of things for you. He could play very different positions. He's going to go out there and be a high motor, intelligent guy that's going to interpret the assignment that Greg Berhalter is going to give him best than anyone I know. So please stop it with the whole they did not earn their spot. They might not be your cup of tea. They want to be the player that you wanted, and that's okay. That's your prerogative. But don't talk about earning and limitation on your talent when you don't watch a game that they play.
All right. Got the juice boxes. Now, we got the juice boxes. We'll wrap up with juice boxes here.
Perfect.
All right. And then obviously, we'll keep talking Mundialista as we keep going forward closer to that tournament that we think is going to happen over there in Qatar. All right. So here's your juice boxes. We're going to go 5-1. Your number five, Spain at +850.
Okay.
Your number four, England at +800. Your number three, France at +600.
Okay.
Because of that Mbappe dude, I guess. I've heard he's okay at the soccer.
He's decent. He's decent.
Argentina is your number two at +550.
Okay.
Brazil, number one in the clubhouse at +400. So what do you think about those five, and is somebody missing?
No, I think that's pretty solid. Hard to argue with the numbers, the quality. England, I'm not high on.
So you're saying it's not coming home is what you're saying?
No. I don't see it. They just seem to struggle in specific times of the World Cup. And the team that I think, to me, calls the attention is Argentina. Brazil, obviously, right? I think everybody expects them to be. That's what their number one. The depth of their team and the quality of it. And, I mean, they could be able to build like a C and a B team that could, you know, get far in this World Cup. Goalkeeping-wise, they're so deep. And forward attacking, so many options there. Spain, I think, would be – if I'm taking the a juice box is going to give me a little bit more money for my bucks. I think Spain, you know, Gabi and Pedri, these are two guys that I think are going to be interesting. Asensio, Spain is a quality squad that has a systematic way of playing. And they, I think, have turned the dial from the old guys to the new guys, right? That typical change of eras is happening this roster. So I think that they're interesting. If I would say that somebody was missing, I think Belgium is getting ready to, you know, maybe do a little bit of noise. I know that not a lot of people are high on them, but I think that going off of that talent, they might be interesting to take a look at. But aside from that, that's about it. I think that we know in the World Cup, there's like a specific teams that are always going to get a little bit farther, and five of those are there. But if I had to take the juice boxes, maybe I'll go with Spain just to try to get a little bit meant for my buck. If I'm going with a certainty and, you know, playing it safer, I'll probably go with Argentina. I think Brazil, I'm high on them. But I don't know if this is their year necessarily, man. A lot of people, I think, are feeling that because of their talent level, they're just going to run through everybody. And they ran through CONMEBOL, you know. So I get where the hype is. But I feel like in this specific tournament, sometimes you can get a national team that's going to face you, that they're not going to respect that emblem right here, the way sometimes CONMEBOL just kind of fears Brazil. So they might get a little bit of a contingency on that one. So I'll go with Argentina and Spain on that one.
All right. So just outside your top five, Germany's at a plus 1,000. Netherlands at a plus 1,200. That's 6 and 7. Portugal's at 8 with plus 1,400 with CR7 and his killer abs. Belgium is at 9 at a plus 1,600. Then everybody kind of goes from there. Denmark at 2,800 and so on and so on. One more story before we go. Came out from Roberto Abramovitz. I believe it was yesterday. Alejandro Zendejas is going to be summoned, and this is translated, summoned by the USMNT after the World Cup of Qatar. Greg Berhalter confirmed it, adding that the 24-year-old Mexican-American from Club America is committed to the U.S., U15, U16, U17, U18, U20. He played two friendlies with Mexico. Apparently, he wanted assurances from Tata Martino and El Tri that he would be in a starting spot. They told him no, and so now it looks like Zendejas is going to be with the Stars and Stripes. What do you think?
Hey, that's interesting. That's going to be another blow to the Mexican national team that Tata has been heavily criticized for not doing more and maybe getting that front office, those above him, to just try to figure out a way to bring this guy in. So good for the U.S. national team, as always, ahead of the game when it comes to that subject. I mean, you know, a guy like Ricardo Pepi at some point had a similar desire from both ends. You know, that's going to be a battle that's going to be ongoing forever. And I feel like Mexico hasn't quite realized how important it is to get these guys early. So, you know, good for the U.S. national team, right? Mexico in general, I don't know why they have such a hard time when it comes to these dual citizenship situations. Yeah.
All about Cruton, brother. We know about Cruton here in the Southeast when it comes to college football. You got to get on him early, and you got to make sure that if you don't have him at first, you got to find a way to flip him. You got to find a way to flip that recruit to come to your campus, brother. That's how it all is. So I get the idea of turning this almost into a college football kind of a thing where, okay, you're going to that school. We'll tell you what, you can come to our school and you can come here and you can have a good time and we're going to flip that recruit. So
you are not lying, man. Nick Saban could be the Ted Lasso to the national Mexican team, man. Let's bring
See, there you go. All right, what's going on with Soccer Bar and Pulso Sports in the next 7 days?
Well, I'm actually hopping on right after this, Pulso Sports Spanish. If you want to get your take on everything we talked about right now in Spanish, just go ahead and wait for this to be over. Switch over to Soccer Bar on YouTube. And that's all I'm going to leave you with, because I'm going to hop right on there right after this.
All right, we'll go hop on there right after this. We are done for another round of Thursdays with Nico on a Friday. Go Soccer Bar on YouTube right now. Guaranteed. We'll see you next week, my friend.
Let's do it.
All right.
Ciao.
All right, he is out of here. Go to the Soccer Bar. So I'm going to end this broadcast because it's the last broadcast of the week, and we'll do a whole bunch of other stuff as we go. Thanks for hanging out with us for another round of Thursdays with Nico on a Friday. And once again, lest we forget, thanks to all who will serve, are serving, or who have served, and especially to those who never made it home. Quick story before we go. My grandfather, and I know that we've talked about him here on the network a lot, and my grandfather was Battle of Britain, North Africa, World War II, wanted to go to Korea, but they said he was too old, so they had him work in the wind tunnels at the Arnold Engineering Development Center in Tullahoma, Tennessee, and he also wanted to go to Vietnam and serve, but once again, he was too old to do that. There were the stories that he would tell about his time serving this country. And, you know, you can always catch up with Nico Leafy here on the network and get his perspective on what it's like to serve this nation. For my grandfather, he always would tell the funny stories. He would not tell the stories of seriousness. There were two that would always stick in my head that he would tell. One was kind of funny, but kind of serious, and the other was pretty funny. He was in Algeria, I believe. It's either Algeria or Morocco, and it was in North Africa. And he was a bird colonel at the time, and he and his friend, they were both bird colonels, and they were at the base right there at the dock in the port where they were unloading all of this gear for the United States Armed Services as they were fighting there in North Africa. They didn't have any wheels, and so They wanted to get around. They were bored just kind of hanging around on the port and everything that was going on there. So they wanted to get some wheels, and they wanted to kind of take a tour as to, you know, what else was going on in the outside world outside of the port that they were in. And there was this, you know, kid who was probably a kid, you know, 16, 17. He probably fibbed about his age so he could serve. Just absolute private as private can be. And so my grandfather and his buddy, they're walking along all these lines of Jeeps that had just been unloaded from the port. And they're right there on the edge of the water. And so they're going back and forth. And he looks at this random Jeep and he goes, "That's my Jeep. Hey, that's my Jeep right there." And so this young kid private, he's not going to challenge my grandfather. He's his bird colonel. He's going to say, "Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir." And so my grandfather hops in the Jeep, and his buddy, in a row over or so, you know, he's sitting there and he's looking, "Hey, in private, yeah, this is my Jeep here." And so once again, you're not going to sit there as a private. You're not going to sit there and challenge two bird colonels. And so my grandfather and his buddy, they took the two Jeeps off from the port, and they just kind of rode them until they were out of gas, and then they just kind of left them. And so, you know, that's what you got to do sometimes when you were a bird colonel. And then when he was flying into Britain, the Germans would jam the Allied radio frequencies. And what they would do is, to everyone who, you know, was wearing a headset, and they would, you know, have their communications with the ground from the air, the Germans would make a point to sit there and identify the battalions and the armed service units that were coming into the country. And they would go onto the jammed frequency, and they would sit there and say, you know, "We welcome the 65th, the 68th, the 85th, you know, airborne. We welcome the army," on all these kinds of things. And they would break down the units that they knew were coming. And they would say, "We welcome you. We welcome you here to England. We will be seeing you soon." And that was about as close as my grandfather ever got to explaining what it was like to serve his country. He would only tell those kinds of stories. He wouldn't get into the details of losing friends and being, you know, part of combat, those kinds of things. And so what I would ask to you is, remember those who, as I've said, who will be serving, who are serving, who have served, who never came home, who came home differently, and just were not the same person. Be there for them. Listen when they may not want to volunteer information. Just be there to listen sometimes. You don't have to press them to ask what's wrong. Sometimes they may just want to talk, and it doesn't matter what they want to talk about. Just let them talk. Be there. Be an ear for them, because the battles that they fight aren't just external. They're internal battles that they fight every day. So the more that we can be there for them and for these people who valiantly put their lives ahead of all of ours every single day, that's what I would like to ask of you today and every day. And I know that at Veterans Day, I always kind of trot out the same stories and things like that, but just be there for those who have been a part of this country in a military, environment, a military identity, because you never know. And they may want to say something, and I'd rather them get that off their chest and be able to have a conversation about it and feel better for just that 10 or 15 seconds that they get to say something. So be there for those who are a part of the military. And as I always say here on Veterans Day, lest we forget. So that'll do it. That's another round of Thursdays with Nico on a Friday. Once again, thanks for hanging out with us. Go to the soccer bar on YouTube, because that's where Nico is right now. And he and all of the soccer bar folks, they're hanging around and they're telling you everything that's going on in the world. So we'll be back at it again on Monday with a Reaction Monday about anything and everything that happened this past weekend, as we get you ready for what's going to be happening next weekend. I've heard there's a competition that's going to be going on that involves a lot of players around the world. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about all the other things. Forbidden Door might be open, and we'll just rock and roll from there. Oh, and we got a USL Championship final. We'll have that. We'll talk about that as well on the USL Championship show on Tuesday when that is released on the network. Don't forget, Soccer Done Here, available iOS and Android. The SDH app has all the programming that we have here at SDH. So once again, thanks for hanging out with us once again for another week of soccer down here. Mucha plata, y'all. And since it is the end of the show and the end of the week, that means I get to do this. Play it safe, everybody. We'll see you next week.